Good morning. Welcome to the Second Court of Appeals. You have for your panel this morning, to my right, Justice Ann Gardner. To my left, I'm pleased to introduce our newest member of the court, Justice Bill Meyer. We have only one case on the docket for this morning that will be submitted orally, so you are the show for this morning.
Good morning. Let me apologize in advance. I've been a little sick during the vacation, so my voice is squeaky. It won't be very appealing sounding, but I'm still here. I thank you for allowing us an opportunity to argue this case. I think it's kind of an interesting case in that it kind of ushers in our new era of ISP addresses, internet access, internet sharing, things of that nature. So this is sort of the beginning of all the cases I think we're going to see involving this sort of area that people of my era, at least, are not that familiar with. So it's been very interesting to me to kind of delve into this. Mr. Wagner's case presents this court with some issues concerning possession of child pornography and promotion of child pornography. In this particular case, he was convicted of 7 different counts. 3 of those were for the second-degree offense of promotion of child pornography, that is, disseminating it, sending it intentionally to other people. He was also convicted of 4 cases of the third-degree offense of possession of child pornography. My first issue concerns and attacking the sufficiency of the evidence. And right off the top, let me say that my attack on the sufficiency legally and factually is based upon the promotion of child pornography counts. Ultimately, what the court did is, in punishment, Mr. Wagner received 15 years on each of the promotion counts, 10 years on each of the possession counts, which resulted in the court then stacking 2 of the 15-year sentences, equaling 30 years, and then all of the 10-year sentences, consolidating those as basically one 10-year sentence and stacking that on top. So he ended up with a 40-year sentence out of these 7 convictions in a single trial. The most important issue that I think that I'm attacking is a factual sufficiency of the evidence to prove the promotion issues in the case.
Now, these shared files.
Yes.
When you put shared files on your computer,
yes,
you know that people can come in and access them, right?
I don't know that everybody knows that. I did not know that when the first Shariza stuff or Napster came out and my children were downloading songs. I did not know, and there's nothing in there that proves that somebody would know that when you download, because people use Napster, Shariza, all of these share, and they are called sharing, but I assume you go in there to get, I went in there to get music. And I think people do that. And Mr. Wagner was going in there to get child pornography. As repugnant as that is, you download the software which enables you to obtain information. At the same time, I think a lot of people are unaware that that automatically defaults to a setting of share, which means, I guess, when your computer's on at some point, and this was not addressed in the trial, people can come in. But there's no specific notice of that. It is an automatic default, and the expert for the state testified to that. When you download that just so that you can get, and that's how it's promoted, you want to get these movies. You want to get, you know, perfectly, it's not really legal because you're still getting stuff you haven't paid for, but a lot of people innocently will do it for all kinds of things, movies, songs, all kinds of stuff.
Make changes in your firewall for people to be able to access your shared files?
I don't believe so.
Changes in your firewall to prevent people's accessing your shared files?
I think you can do that if you're aware that you're automatically sharing items. I think you can. I wouldn't know how to do it. There's no evidence in the record to show that Mr. Wagner did anything concerning that. What we know is if I decide, as bad as it is, that I'm going to go get some child pornography, or in a more benign situation, I want to go get some music. You go on the internet, you look, you're going to find Kazaa, iTunes, which is perfectly legal, but all these other type of things, oh, it's free, it's for nothing, all you got to do is download this program. You click the button, download the program, and you're sharing by default. It's automatically happening. And that's my issue with this. There was no evidence in this particular case that Mr. Wegner ever sent an email with a photograph intentionally sending somebody child pornography. He downloaded a lot of child pornography. There's no question about it. And he used a shareware to do that, but there's no evidence that he set that to share, because the expert testified that's an automatic thing. And that's my problem. I think the promotion statute is set out to stop people from promoting child pornography, going out there, selling it, letting people, giving it to other people purposefully and intentionally. And that's what's real important in this inquiry, because, you know, and let me just say this, that it's kind of difficult to separate. This is a purely legal argument. And then you look at the evidence in this case, and it's repugnant. There's no doubt, doing stuff that we don't condone and don't like. He was getting child pornography. The problem is not to be blinded by that being as bad as it is, and turning it into something much greater, as in the promotion issue. Because I think we're on a very slippery course, downward slope, if we're going to say when somebody downloads his shares or any kind of shareware, they intentionally and get something, that they're intending to promote child pornography by they're intentionally sending it out. And the statute is also extremely specific on the promotion. The state had to prove, in this particular case, bringing it back to our facts, there were three counts of promotion of child pornography. The basis of those counts were that an undercover officer went on the Sherazah and was downloading pornography from all these share places. And three different things he got from Mr. Wegner's ISP on a date about 3-4 months before the search warrant was executed on Mr. Wegner's house. So he just went out there, got some pornography from various different places, and then traced back the ISP, got the search warrant, and looked. Under the statute, the law requires, and under this case, the way it was indicted, because there's two ways to promote. You can possess with the intent to promote. Not applicable in our case, okay? This indictment, it alleged he intentionally promoted by disseminating and knowing the contents of what he disseminated. That's what the state had to prove of those three pieces of pornography, okay? Because that's how it's alleged in the indictment. The first issue is, did he have an intent to disseminate simply because he had downloaded a ton of child pornography off of shareware? Because there is no evidence he knew people were taking it off of his. There's no evidence that he changed any of the default settings. It was automatically programmed to do that. There's no evidence that he ever sent an email or a specific, tapped a button to send child pornography to somebody else. All the evidence shows is he used Sherazah to download child pornography, and then somebody else, by automatically default, could get in there.
Was there any evidence that Sherazah has any language on its website, or when you download its software, that when you use it, you're agreeing to leave your computer on or something to that effect in order that others may share, that's part of the deal?
I don't believe there was any testimony in this case concerning that. Okay. I'm trying to separate my personal inquiry into all this. I don't think there is, and I couldn't.
I've seen language like that.
I have too, you know, on my iTunes, but I tend to go just accept the agreement and go on and not read it all. But I don't know if there's specific evidence in this case. I don't recall that there was that says that they have that on there about leaving your computer on or anything like that on these facts. So the intent to promote is a big issue. He can't be reckless. I mean, I think, you know, you kind of start looking through this and you kind of go, well, you know, we've all come of age. We're using computers. We're using Sherazah. You know, he should have known. You know, it's called shareware. And what's important is the statute being specific, and the evidence must prove an intentional or knowing, not a reckless. Not, you know, he should have been aware, or he probably should have known, but an intentional act of promoting. And it's my position, under the facts of this case, just by virtue of the fact that you've downloaded shareware to obtain child pornography or anything else, does not prove an intent to promote that because the default happens to be set that way.
So promotion can't be passive. I mean, you're saying that promotion should require that you do something to promote it rather than fail to do something to stop its dissemination.
I would certainly hope so. I would certainly hope so when the statute specifically requires intentional or knowing conduct on somebody's part. The second issue on the sufficiency issue is knowledge. The statute under promotion is again, very specific in that you have to know at the time that you disseminate intentionally that photo that's disseminated, that specific photo, depicts a child underage, you know, in sexual conduct, that it's child pornography. You have to know that when you disseminate it. And here's the other problem in this particular case. There is no evidence, and the expert testified to this specifically, there is absolutely zero evidence that this defendant, at the time that that cop got in there and got that piece of evidence, that the defendant knew what that depicted. None. And he says that from the witness stand. I cannot prove that Mr. Wagner knew what the picture depicted. Did it have a foul name? Yes. But he also testified that even though something has a foul name like Lolita or, you know, child sex or whatever those things have, doesn't mean that that's what that picture, that's what you're getting. So you can go in there and request, you know, a file named, you know, Lolita or child sex or underage kid or whatever, and it may not be that at all. And the evidence is replete with that. They're often mislabeled. There's all kinds of things, scams out there trying to get people interested. This can go for movies and music as well. You could download a song, think it's that song, and it's not that song. You can also download without seeing what you've got. So once again, we're back to Mr. Wagner was obviously attempting to obtain child pornography by the names of the items that he was obtaining, okay? Not a good thing, but he was intending to obtain them for himself. When the officer went in to get it, there is no evidence that Mr. Wagner knew that what he was accidentally disseminating or automatically disseminating was actually child pornography. And the statute requires that for the evidence to be sufficient. And a lot of times they can show when somebody opened it and looked at the photograph. But in this particular case, there is zero evidence that
how
at that
time.
How do you
show who opened it and who looked at it?
That Mr. Wagner did, that the defendant did.
I know, but how does the state show who opened it or who looked at it?
Well, you're going to have to do that circumstantially as far as who had access to the computer, whose computer that was. But in this case, there's no evidence that that file was ever opened at the time the officer obtained it. That it had ever been opened. And that, to me, is a very serious problem.
The computer only shows the last time it was opened.
That's correct. That's correct. And in this case, there's no evidence to show that he knew what was disseminated or that he was disseminating intentionally. And those are the two elements. The other thing I wanted to address, I kind of missed it, was the fact that they're put in a file called share. That's automatic as well. You get on Kazaa, you open it up, you start getting stuff that you want to look at. It's automatically downloaded in a file called share. And so that doesn't prove any intent to disseminate, any knowledge of what you've got either. And so, you know, I guess we need to take out a billboard or something to let people be more aware of that. I just think it's woefully insufficient in this case concerning the promotion, not the possession issues of the case. The two other issues I've gotten, I think I'm just about out, that I wanted to touch on is the extraneous offenses, 90 pages of photographs or names of photographs introduced. I have egregious issues with that and the rebuttal reasons, therefore, obviously highly prejudicial evidence given in rebuttal to an argument that supposedly the defense was making that it was automatically downloaded. And that's not the argument the defense ever made in the case. You can't automatically download child pornography. You've got to, on those things, you've got to go out and seek what you're getting. Mr. Wagner's defense attorney never said he didn't purposely try to obtain those photographs. The issue was the automatic dissemination of them concerning promotion. And in rebuttal to that argument, The prosecutor then offered 90 pages, I think it was 900 names of things that appeared to be child pornography. Highly prejudicial, not probative or of anything concerning the dissemination issue in the case. And I'd ask the court to look at that seriously, and I might have a chance to address that again.
Was there any evidence of dissemination? Is there any way to tell on the computer, on his computer, that, in fact, someone else did view his downloads?
What the state had was the officer that went in and got those three items from a different location. That's the evidence that it was disseminated.
No evidence of dissemination to any member of the public?
No evidence of that.
Okay. No email that says, hey, Joe, take a look at this?
Absolutely none. Nothing specific where there was evidence of any specific conduct on my client's part to send it out.
Okay.
Thank you.
May it please the court. I'll start kind of backwards at the very last thing mentioned, and I'm going to ask the court to look at this because I wrote this brief a while ago. I don't remember it being 90 pages. I think it was a list of files for the third point of error they were complaining about, but I'm going to dispute that it was 90 pages and just simply ask the court to look at that. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong, but that's not my recollection. The other thing I do want to try and remember to do is I think when I was working on the brief on this, one of the things that I did and that I actually thought was helpful and as unpleasant as this could be, I'm going to ask y'all, get the original exhibits in this case and look at them and listen to it. It's unpleasant, but it's helpful to see, you know, what exactly people are talking about in the testimony. There's one exhibit where they sort of walk you through what the computer looked like, and this is how it was set up. I found that helpful, so I'm going to recommend that y'all do look at that.
Okay, let me ask you this, Deborah. The briefs refer to a son.
Correct.
Who also used the same computer.
Yes.
Do we attribute everything on that computer to the father? Or how
you know, if I remember right, the son in this case was, I think, 6 years old.
Suppose we have a 16-year-old son. How is it guilt because you're the owner of the computer, or do you have to be the one that?
I think you have to be the one. I think you know it's got to necessarily be a circumstantial deal when you're looking at it. Does this evidence support that? But from what I remember, when they did the interview, Mr. Winger in this case is. He admits this is my stuff, and I think when you're talking about a six-year-old didn't do this,
well,
and it's kind of scary. The six-year-old had access to a computer where all this was a few clicks away.
What I'm wondering is, you remember that case where the fellow sent his computer to the shop to be fixed, and they searched the whole computer and found all kinds of stuff. And said he had no expectation of privacy because it wasn't password protected. Are we moving to an era now that we need to password protect even access to our computers, any access to our computers, other so that we're not prosecuted for something some other person downloads?
I think, again, we don't have to get there, and this case didn't really get there because he admitted, you know, this was my stuff. This was my collection of stuff. I think that certainly, you know, it's hard to imagine why somebody would have this kind of material on their computer, and the fact that, in this case, that it wasn't password protected, I think, you know, it certainly does not benefit him when he was allowing young children to look at the computer. But again, the point here is, as he admits, this was his. And so this isn't a case where somebody had access to a computer, other people had access to it. We don't know who downloaded it. That's not an issue in this case. And that's probably a better question for when that situation comes up, if it does. This case, though, I think when I look at the evidence, it's almost overwhelming to show that he intentionally promoted child pornography and that he knew that's what he was doing. He downloaded and used a program called Shareaza. The name is Shareaza. It's file sharing software. He was a fairly savvy computer user, more so than I am. He had used file sharing software before. He didn't like one version, one kind of like Napster or whatever it was, I don't remember. But he had switched file sharing programs because he wanted Shareaza for certain features. The Shareaza does default to share your files that you've downloaded through them, but he had gone in and changed some of the defaults, and that's something that you see on the exhibit if you look at that. I don't remember exactly which defaults he changed, but I know there was testimony that he had actually gone in and changed some things about the defaults. The other thing, though...
Do you remember if it was... he had changed them to make it easier to access or harder to access?
I don't remember exactly what... I don't remember. The other thing that I think is important is when he had... when you look at what was on the computer, he had a large collection of pornography, child pornography as well as adult. He had gone in and created, under his shared folder, he had then created subfolders that he labeled to explain kind of the genre of pornography that was in that folder. So, and the other thing he did that I think is important is he retained or created, I don't know which way it was, file names that are certainly descriptive. Maybe it's just, we'll just leave it, they're certainly descriptive of what would be in that. The reason you do that is to make it easier to share it with other people.
Do the other people, this is really an ignorant question, it shows how much I know, when they're wanting to obtain something he's downloaded, will they see the file folder names or the file names? What of all that do they see?
You know, I know on this one that because that's how that was one of the exhibits is the officer who downloaded it could browse the user, and I think that's something that somebody could, if you like one thing they have, you can browse that person to see what other things they have available. So once, you know, in this sort of world, once you hit on somebody who has child pornography that you like, you know that might be somebody to get it from again. You know, the file names, the date they were created, I mean, these, when you look at, these were created in the shared folder with this file name before the downloads that he was charged with. So, while you don't have somebody standing there who can say, oh, well, I saw him open up the file and look at it, he organized it under the young folder, indicating which is where he had all his child pornography, and he kept this file name. So at some point, you know, we know he viewed it. We know that he had already organized it into that folder with that file name before it was downloaded. And we do know the last access date after the last time it was accessed, he certainly didn't delete it, he didn't rename it, he didn't move it. So circumstantially, it's a very strong case that he knew exactly what he was doing. Now, there's testimony. He understood file sharing software. He understood that his files could be shared. What he basically is arguing is, well, I just didn't know exactly when it was being shared and exactly who was sharing it. Well, I don't understand how that gets you out of intentionally promoting, because it's like if I made a photocopy of child pornography and I took it to the bookstore and I plopped it down on the table and walked off, so, you know, there are 50 copies of it, somebody can come by and take one, That's intentionally promoting child pornography. I'm disseminating it. I'm making it available for anybody who wants to come by and get it, and that's exactly what he did. He had no idea who was, it could have been children, you know, it could have been teenagers, it could have been anybody. He didn't care. He had his files available for sharing, and he was intentionally promoting child pornography, and he knew exactly what was in those files. When you look at how the files were organized, they were created in the subfolder. It's a very strong case that he did. There was testimony, Sharazon has a preview feature, so you can look at a file to see what it is before you download it. He told police in the interview that he had viewed most of the images he downloaded. Again, the names indicate even to the most casual computer user that they would contain child pornography. The structure of the file. So this is a strong case. Let's see what else. I guess the final thing, the analyst who did testify said he couldn't prove that the user of the computer viewed the picture. But I don't, that testimony isn't determinative of sufficiency of the evidence. Each witness had a certain thing that they could testify to. They didn't necessarily have the same knowledge of all the evidence that the jury had. And when you look at it, I really think that what he was saying is, well, I can't give you absolutely incontrovertible direct proof of this. It's not saying circumstantially that the state can't prove it, because in this case, the state did. The third point of error is the extraneous offense. The problem with these cases, everything about them is repulsive, repugnant, but there's nothing unfair about introducing the list of names, of file names, that they're his files. He created or retained these names. We didn't introduce the pictures that went behind them. That would have been a much tougher 403 argument, but this was simply a list of file names. It was very probative for the jury in trying to figure this out as to, could this have been accidental, blah, blah, blah. You look at the file names, you look at his list of folders, and it's clear that he knew exactly what he was doing. He knew that this was child pornography. He was looking for certain kinds of pornography to put them in these folders. He kept the file names so that people could easily search for them and find them on his computer. So I think that was definitely not just relevant, but it was critical evidence for the jury to understand. Because again, this is kind of a technical sort of case in that you've got people of varying experiences with computers. If you have somebody who's not that computer savvy, this exhibit certainly helped them to understand, what was going on with this computer, how it was set up, what was available for sharing, and how that worked.
Are you saying that all shareware creates a shared file? So if you go in and find a game that's shareware, it says, you don't have to pay for it, but appreciate a contribution, that you're opening up your computer for people to come in and... Is that what you're saying?
Well, I'm saying that when you go in and you use peer-to-peer file sharing software...
Okay. I thought you were saying when you use shareware... And I was...
Well, shareware, my understanding of shareware, and I'm not that computer savvy, is it's something that somebody gets on the internet and puts it out there and shares with everybody. If I download it, I'm not necessarily sharing.
Okay.
I'm using peer-to-peer file sharing software, I think I just don't understand how you can be a user of that, especially a prolific user of that, where you've changed programs even because you like one program better than another. And he admits, that's the point of peer-to-peer file sharing software. So he did understand that.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure I was understanding what you were saying. Okay.
If the court doesn't have any other questions, then the state will simply ask that the court affirm these convictions. Thank you.
Thanks.
just some last points. I was wrong. It's 26 pages, 900 names on the extraneous offense. So I guess I got 90 out of 900. But it was 900 separate names. And I want to start there because it was just names. And what we know from the expert is that just because it has a bad name or it looks horrible doesn't mean that there is a bad picture there. And so how can that possibly not be highly prejudicial? Because he could have had a lot of those names, and a lot of them were not illegal. A lot of them were adult pornography names that were nasty and gross. How could that not be prejudicial? It's not relevant to anything concerning sharing. It was relevant to making him look like a sicko, to make him look really, really bad. And when you offer just the names, which may not even have pictures associated with them that are really bad, how can that be anything but exceedingly prejudicial? So now we understand how you can have insufficient evidence as a matter of law and fact in a case, on a child promotion case, and have a jury find him guilty of all the counts, even when the evidence is insufficient. Because at that point, when those 26 pages, and I've attached them to my brief, you start looking through that, any human being, the human emotion is going to override any kind of intellectual inquiry as to whether or not the evidence proves an intentional act of sharing and knowledge of those. Highly prejudicial, and I think a reversal is required just on that ground alone. But the sufficiency issue, the prosecutor mentioned it, subfolders. There was evidence and testimony there were subfolders created. It's how he organized his files that he was obtaining. There is no evidence that at the time the promotion occurred on those three incidences that those subfolders had been created. They were in a share file that is an automatic default that occurs when you use shareware. And so I think that's a real important issue in the case. Intent is required by law, and a knowledge of what's in that is required by law. And as repugnant and disgusting as a lot of this was, he was intending to have a huge collection of child and adult pornography. There's no evidence that he intentionally wanted to disseminate it or knew that those actual three items were child pornography that were disseminated. And based on, yes, sir.
The list.
Yes.
The titles on the list.
Yes.
Is there a dispute that Mr. Winger created those titles?
No, he did not create those titles under the evidence.
The list that that's attached to your exhibits.
Correct.
And then within that list, is he the one who put those titles on those parts of the list?
You mean the
exhibits that you attached to your appendix that was a list of 26 pages of titles?
Correct.
I'm asking if it is disputed or was disputed at the trial that Mr. Winger prepared those titles that were put on that list.
The evidence was replete that he did not title those photographs.
No, ma'am, I'm not talking about the photographs. I'm talking about
the list.
The list itself. Did he create the list?
Okay, he did not. There's no evidence at all that, and I think the state would agree, that he did not put these names down. He did not create those names.
Am I not understanding? The argument about the list came up at the punishment phase of the trial. Is that correct?
No, that was at guilt innocence.
And in terms of the contentions in the brief filed by the state that Mr. Winger admitted guilt at the punishment phase, did he address that?
Yes, sir. When he testified at punishment, I believe he admitted his guilt concerning the possession of all the pornography items. That he was downloading pornography. I don't believe he admitted his guilt concerning an intent to promote pornography.
Thank you.
Do we have any other questions? With that,
status of the DeGarmo rule.
I think it's in question personally. I think the court's chipping away at it. I'm sure y'all agree with that. It has to be obviously. I think it's just in question. That is the best way I can put it. We can argue both sides under the law. Ethically, it stands under the case law, but it certainly is a lot weaker than it was because of all the reasons stated in the recent opinions that have discussed why that rule doesn't make a lot of sense in the reality of our trial situations.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Questions? Thank you. All right. Well, we appreciate your argument. The cyber world is increasingly influencing what we do up here, so appreciate all the work you've done to prepare for today and the guidance you've given us. Appreciate you coming in. Your case is submitted. Since you are the only case we have today, this court will be adjourned.